This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
And a good Friday morning to you. Glad you could be with us on Wake Up Call. It is Sports Map Radio. A lot of NBA to get to tonight. Game 6 is the Milwaukee Bucks have now evened up the series against Brooklyn. They win 104-89, and we head to a Game 7 on Saturday. Kevin Durant did not do the exact thing he did in Game 5. Still had a good night for him, but in the end, Milwaukee led wire to wire in this one, and now have forced a Game 7, and this is a series where the home team has won every single game. I'm more fascinated, though, with what could happen tonight. The Atlanta Hawks hosting the Philadelphia 76ers in Game 6 at State Farm Arena. Atlanta's good at home. They did drop one home game in this series, but they're good at home, and they just need one win to go to the Eastern Conference Finals after taking Game 4 and Game 5 and rallying in both of those games, rallying from 18 points down, 26 points down, and now need one out of the next two. And Philadelphia, the top seed in the East, this would be massively disappointing to not only not get to the Eastern Conference Finals, but losing to a scrappy Hawks team when this series was won by them. And the other game tonight, the Clippers taking on the Utah Jazz with Los Angeles leading that series 3-2. That game 6 at the Staples Center, and the Clippers for the first time in franchise history could go on to the Western Conference Finals. We've also got Rick Carlisle stepping down as the head coach of the Dallas Mavericks. There is more to this than meets the eye. We'll get to that story coming up. And of course, yesterday was round one of the U.S. Open at Torrey Pines. And guess what? They didn't get it all in. Had a fog, darkness, suspension. They're going to wrap up round one early this morning before getting into round two. It's one of the deepest fields in golf. They have a lot of players that participate in this U.S. Open. It's not only the professional tour players and the international tour players that qualify for this. There's qualifiers that go around the country. And so if you're on the Corn Ferry Tour, or you're on, you know, you're an amateur, good amateur player, you can qualify for this thing. So there's a lot of people in this field. They couldn't get it all in. They'll try to do it to finish it up today. Russell Henley is the leader at 4-under, but we've got a Phil update as we continue along. It is Wake Up Call. Hit us up on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. But coming up, last night's Game 6 between Milwaukee and Brooklyn as we roll along on Sports Map Radio.
Listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Good morning. Thanks for joining us on Wake Up Call. Hey, earn a $5 rebate by trading up any non-contact thermometer towards an Exergen purchased at any retailer. Accuracy matters when it comes to taking your temperature. And Exergen temporal artery thermometers are backed by more than 80 published peer-reviewed clinical studies. Visit Exergen.com. Happy Friday to you. So last night was only one playoff game on the schedule. Milwaukee evened up the series with Brooklyn. They win 104-89. Look, I'm one of those guys that if you disagree with me, I go, oh, that's nice, but you're wrong. But in this case, if you disagree with me, that's okay. It's okay. But here's my opinion of last night's game. I thought the last night's game was really boring. Really boring. I thought Brooklyn didn't have really any, you know, just going through the motions. Milwaukee led this thing wire to wire. Chris Middleton had 38 points. Giannis had 30. They both had great nights. Even Kevin Durant, it wasn't his classic triple-double that he had the other night where he had 49, but he had a pretty good night. I just never found this game interesting. I never found this game compelling. And here's the thing. This was a game that Brooklyn could have closed out the series. You know, could have won this game and gone on to the Eastern Conference Finals. And the result of this game is we get a Game 7 out of this series, but I did not find this entertaining at all. At all. I thought it was just an average. It felt like a regular basketball game. It felt like a regular season Thursday night, January 14th, Brooklyn on a Game 2 of a 4-game road trip. That's what it felt like to me. Now, it felt different for Milwaukee. You know, the crowd was in it. The crowd was, you know, very emotional, obviously, to get the Bucks to survive. But I'm talking about the play on the court. Like, the play on the court was, to me, it felt like a regular season game. The atmosphere definitely felt playoff-like. That's a definite. But it didn't feel like there was a level of urgency on Brooklyn. And Milwaukee just sort of went, all right, we'll just take it then. If you don't want to do anything, and fine, we'll just keep winning, leading this game. And that's what I felt like. It just did not feel, it just didn't feel that great. This was not a marquee playoff matchup that I would box up and sell if I was the NBA. Now, Game 7 could be different. Game 7 could be different. The home team has won every single game so far in this series. And Brooklyn had this epic Game 5, right? But let's not forget, what Game 5 is going to be remembered for is Kevin Durant's triple-double. Right, 49 points, 17 rebounds, 10 assists, and just taking the team on his shoulders, right? James Harden was playing but not effective, and he was the guy that carried Brooklyn to victory. But let's not forget, that was a game in which Brooklyn had to fight their way back into the game. That was not one of those, Kevin Durant had this triple-double and everything worked for Brooklyn en route to this very comfortable victory in Game 5. They had to work for it and they had to come back. They were trailing in that game. Milwaukee had the lead and lost the lead and, you know, had to go home to stave off elimination. Brooklyn looked tired last night. They just looked sort of drawn down. And that's what I think, why I thought the game was kind of boring. I'll be honest with you. I watch these games a lot of times doing something else. I'm usually writing scripts for sports updates and getting ready for the show and organizing outlines and things like that. So my brain is like 75% on the television and like 25% on what I'm doing. I spent a lot more time focusing on what I was doing rather than the game. The game just did not, it just did not feel as entertaining. But that being said, I don't care how you get to the finish line. A game seven is the finish line, right? That's what you want. If you don't root for Milwaukee or don't root for Brooklyn, you can enjoy a game seven. That's the joy of these postseasons, where there is an elimination feel. Both teams are desperate. There isn't a tomorrow. There isn't a, that's okay, we'll get them at home, which is the way I felt Brooklyn played last night. Now, that's going to be different than tonight. Tonight's two games are both game sixes, and both teams that are home tonight lead the series 3-2. Atlanta can close out their series, and the LA Clippers can close out their series. And I'll be honest, I'm kind of rooting for that. I'm kind of liking the idea of these two teams finishing out their series. Philadelphia has been massively disappointing in this series, blowing two leads, one in Game 4 and then the epic collapse in Game 5 in which they lost a 26-point lead. And Atlanta is the only team that really has not been plagued or bogged down by, I mean, outside of Milwaukee, because Milwaukee is under this too, by an injury that has affected their team in a negative way. We've heard a little bit about Trae Young dealing with a shoulder issue, but it has not affected his play. He's averaging over 29 points a game so far in the playoffs. But every other team is dealing with issues. Every other team is dealing with injuries. Every other team is dealing with, all right, we have lost this person, or we do not have this person available. How are we going to overcome that? I mean, Utah has not had Mike Conley in this series. The Nets are loaded with injuries with their two stars in Kyrie Irving and James Harden. Harden looked better last night, but he's still ineffective. He's still not as effective that he used to be. That hamstring is really bothering him. But at least he's on the court. Right. And then you've got Philadelphia, Joel Embiid. Is his knee okay? Is it not okay? When is it not okay? And when is it fine? Because it looks fine early and then it's not okay late. And that's been the storyline of this postseason, is dealing with injuries. Chris Paul is in the COVID protocol. We don't know when he'll be coming back. And that's been so far this playoffs. Kawhi Leonard is out for the Clippers. And the Atlanta Hawks have a chance to take advantage of that, take advantage of at least an opportunity the way they've been handling Philadelphia late, whether it's Joel Embiid's knee that's causing him to struggle late in these games and sort of assisting in the collapse. We'll see. And the Clippers can go to the Western Conference Finals for the first time in franchise history. And that would be, it would be upsetting for that in this regard, is the people that were very much supportive of the idea that in the end you can have stars on the Clippers and the Lakers are loaded with stars and whatnot. But in the end, Utah and Phoenix were these teams that we didn't really get to know all that well outside of Chris Paul and Devin Booker and Donovan Mitchell for the Jazz. If Utah fails to deliver coming out of this series, yeah, that'll be more it'll be more disappointing in Philadelphia, given their season, than it would be for Utah. But the two number ones could go down tonight in their playoff series against 2-4 seeds in the Clippers and the Atlanta Hawks. Now, Atlanta's been a fantastic story. I mean, again, a team that didn't make the playoffs last year and ran through the Knicks and now has given Philadelphia every single fight that you can expect, even though if you do the on-paper thing, they don't really match up. But I don't know what kind of state the team that leaves this series in terms of Brooklyn and Milwaukee is going to be going into the Eastern Conference Finals. I think Milwaukee is a team that is finding themselves every other game. It's like they have games where they look terrible, and then they have games where they find their rhythm, right? Chris Middleton and Giannis get together, and they put together a game like last night, and then they go back to playing not-so-good basketball. Like, there's no ball movement. They don't really attack. Like, there's no really identifying feature of the way Milwaukee has played in this series. Like, some moments, they look brilliant, and in some moments, they look lost and don't know how to move the basketball around. I think what Brooklyn's problem is they're having a hard time really figuring out how to play without Kyrie and without an effective James Harden, other than let's pray Durant has this mega game. He can only have so many mega games. After a while, he can't do that anymore. Like was everybody thinking like last night Kevin Durant was going to explode for 47 or 48 or 46? Was he going to get another triple? It was very unlikely he was going to do that. Those game fives, that game five can exhaust you, fighting back into a series like that and pouring in the kind of points that he did. But game seven is going to be different. Saturday night, there's no excuses. Saturday night, there's nothing left. Either James Harden is effective, or he's not a liability being ineffective. Kevin Durant either takes his team on his shoulders or he doesn't. The guys that have stepped up in the past for this team when they've needed them the most, either they step up or they don't. That's it. That's it. And either Milwaukee finds a better way to win on the road than blowing a lead or finding a better way to move around the basketball, or they don't. And that's it. They'll be over with on Saturday. And the winner of this series may be facing a really hungry and very good and very dangerous Atlanta Hawks team in the Eastern Conference Finals. And that will be very interesting, because if Atlanta goes up against a team like Brooklyn, I don't care injuries or not, or even a team like Milwaukee that hasn't been really dealing with injuries at all. If Atlanta goes up against either one of those teams and puts up a fight game six or, you know, that kind of thing, I think it would be great. But at the same time, I understand star power sells. Trae Young is really the only one they have in Atlanta.
Yeah, but the way it's setting up right now, I feel like Atlanta can run it.
I do too.
Because the Sixers,
Atlanta's been a tough out. I mean,
I don't think
really
the Sixers are nothing but a speed bump at this point.
I agree. I think
they're just getting in their own way.
Yep. God, they should have wrapped this up a while ago. There's no reason for this. No reason for the collapses in Game 4 and Game 5. This thing should be over.
Yep.
And if you're Philadelphia, wouldn't you have loved the time to chill out a little bit?
You look at the Suns, right? I mean, you have the issue going on with Chris Paul, which haven't heard anything about what the actual issue with the COVID is. But the Suns are, you know, they're kicking back saying, you know what, guys? Hey, Clippers, Jazz, take it. Take it to seven. I don't care.
Go as far as you got. Exactly. And at least with the Phoenix Suns, they can be like, okay, however CP3 has to go through this protocol, well, at least we got some time.
We got time.
We're not doing much, and we can relax a bit and figure this out. And we got some, you know, it's not like in desperation he's going to miss game one and he's going to miss game two and then he's going to miss game three. Right now they're chilling out. He's going through the process. He's going through the health and safety protocol. Right now he's out indefinitely. We don't know when that is going to change, but at least right now they don't have any games on their schedule.
Yeah, probably taking a test every hour. It's like, come on, negative.
Exactly. Let's go. Let's get it done. All right. On Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. All right. Coming up next, staying in the NBA, because Rick Carlisle has decided that he's no longer going to be the head coach of the Dallas Mavericks, a place that he's been 13 years. Is there something to that? We'll discuss next as we continue with Wake Up Call.
is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hey, think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices every day. I like O'Reilly Auto Parts. I was just there not that long ago to get new mats for my car. We're going on our vacation starting tonight, and we used to have the cloth mats, like not the cloth mats, but you know what I mean, like the rugs.
Yes.
And they would bunch up. And they would, like, one of mine would move around, and they would bunch up, and sometimes they would create a little problem when you would go from gas to brake. There would be this little kind of fold in the thing. And I said, I got to get rid of those. So I went into O'Reilly, and the guy helped me get mats for my car that were, like, rubber. So they were really good. So thank you, O'Reilly, for helping me with that. Rick Carlisle has stepped down as the head coach of the Dallas Mavericks. 13 seasons he spent with Dallas. Now, listen, they were ousted in the first round by the LA Clippers. They were up 2-0, winning both games in Los Angeles, and they lost the series in 7. But Mark Cuban said afterwards that there would be no coaching change and that Carlisle would be the head coach. Then yesterday he resigned. So he wasn't let go. He still had 2 years on his contract, and he just decided to leave. Now, I'll tell you, there is a lot of basketball openings. There's a lot of coaching vacancies that he will have his pick from. But there's more to this story than just a guy wanting a new city and a new opportunity somewhere else. Donnie Nelson Jr., we talked about this a little bit yesterday. Donnie Nelson Jr., who is the son of Don Nelson, had been with the organization for 24 years. And he was let go. They parted ways with him. There's a little bit of confusion. It was a mutual parting of ways, but in the end, there's some who say, well, he really was ousted. And in the end, Dallas didn't want him. But sometimes the mutual parting of ways is a more softening of the blow. But the Dallas Mavericks right now are kind of a mess because they don't know what direction they want to go in. And Luka Doncic is at the center of all of it. He never really liked Rick Carlisle. The two clashed a lot. And I think if you're Carlisle, you read the tea leaves and you say, look, this is a league where the superstars are going to rule. I have two choices. I either let Luka do whatever Luka wants, even if it goes against the wishes that I want for this basketball team, or I have to get rid of myself away from Luka Doncic's team, which I think is the second choice that he made, right? Because he just decided to leave. Now, who knows? Maybe he's a guy that always wanted to be the head coach of the Boston Celtics, and that job is available. Maybe he really has an interest in New Orleans and Zion Williamson, because that opening is available. Same with Washington, Indiana, Portland, Orlando. There's a bunch of openings right now in the NBA. And Carlisle may be very interested in one or two or all of them other than working for the Dallas Mavericks again. And working with the coach, and if you're Mark Cuban, think about this for a second. If you're Mark Cuban, and a guy that has 2 years left on his contract came into your office, and a guy that you've known for a very, very long time, he's been with the head coach for 13 years. Cuban said, "Look, this is a friend. This is not just a basketball coach. He's a friend. He's a confidant." And he comes into your office and he says this. Now, I'm not saying he said this. I'm just saying hypothetically. If he said this, "Hey, Mark, look, here's the thing. You know me, you know my ways, you know how I like things done, you know Luka, you know Luka has a way of being his own kind of guy, his own individual. And as you know, Mark, we've clashed throughout the entire season. And not only that, even the season before. We've had differences of opinion. He has, you know, gone against the wishes of what I want to do on this team. He's publicly said things about the way I run this team. He is on the court. Made hand gestures to show how dissatisfied he is with some of the things that I do on this team. But I know you need him. He's a generational superstar. You need him. And you need his mindset to be right. And so you're going to sign him to a Supermax contract. But I can't be his coach. And you don't want me to be his coach. Because we're just not ever going to see eye to eye. And that's not going to work in terms of a championship. It just will be too much for us to get over the way we view this game. So I need to part ways. And to be honest with you, and you know me, and you know me for a very long time, I've always wanted to be the head coach of the Celtics. And we think that we could be a favorite for that job. And if not, I like the organization in Portland. I like the organization in New Orleans, and I think I want to try a new place. I think if you're Cuban, you go, absolutely, absolutely. Fresh blood coming in, a coach that may work well with Luka that's better than this guy who I respect and love, who will always be a cherished member of the Mavericks family, delivered my first championship, my only championship back in 2011. I think you let him go. I think you said, go. That's great. No problem. I'm not going to hold you to this. I'm not going to hold your contract over your head and tell you you can't take the Boston job, whatever. No. Good luck. Good luck. If you're Mark Cuban, you would absolutely take that. Now, again, I'm not saying that that's how it went down. I'm just saying that's how you would rationalize the way Carlisle could resign and become a head coach somewhere with 2 years remaining on his contract, which is sell the angle that me and Luka are not going to work and you need Luka more than you need me. I may be a pretty good coach in your eyes, but there's a lot of good coaches that are out there. But there's not very many Luka Doncic out there. There's not very many players on his level at his age, and his size, and his ability. You've got a generational talent here. Find the right guy that will work with him, and you'll be championship on a championship level. As for me, you know, he was on that 86 Celtics team, right? And he was also a coach of the Detroit Pistons. You know, there's some very good openings. I mean, think about this. Portland, an opportunity to coach Damian Lillard and try to help that organization get another piece to get over the hump. Boston, a historical franchise, right? One of the better organizations in terms of history of its sport. Orlando is crap. Maybe you don't want to go there. Washington's got Russell Westbrook and Bradley Beal. Look like they were on the uptick towards the end of the season. That's an attractive job.
New Orleans
is a very attractive job.
I mean, just everyone there is young, right. Young talent.
Extremely attractive. Now, Carlisle was also in the Portland organization for a while, like in the early 90s. So maybe he likes that area. Maybe he'll go there. I don't know. He's also with the Pacers, too. So I don't know. But New Orleans is a very attractive job. I mean, again, we've kind of joked about it many times, how the NBA is really going to get sick and tired of New Orleans not making the postseason with Zion. A coach like him could come in, really guide that team, really guide the youth of that team and put something together to try to make a run at not only a postseason, but maybe go deep into the postseason. So there's a lot of opportunities for Rick Carlisle. So what my point is, it feels like it's a perfect storm, right? It feels like all the pieces are in place. Right, I've been here 13 years. The only other coach in the NBA who's been at their team longer is Greg Popovich. It's a long time. 13 years is a long time to be a head coach of anybody in the professional ranks. That's a long time. So you can almost see him going, look, been here a while, won you a championship. I don't get along with your superstar. You're going to sign that superstar. I really don't want to coach him. And here's my opportunity with a huge list of great opportunities for me to become a head coach. Whether it's coaching superstars like Damian Lillard or Zion Williams or Russell Westbrook to taking over a historical franchise in Boston, right? Maybe I like Florida and the sunshine and theme parks, and maybe Orlando is an attractive job, although I don't think it is. But maybe he feels that way. I don't know. But there seems like there's an opportunity for him to the it's wide open. He's going to get one of these gigs. If I'm Boston, he would be the first call I'm making now in terms of interviewing. If I'm Brad Stevens, that's a guy I'm absolutely going to bring in for an interview. And he doesn't have to deal with his problem. If you are a coach and you don't get along with a superstar talent and you know it's not going to work out, one of you got to get out of there. And usually it's the head coach. It really is.
Unfortunately.
Right? Unfortunately, but that's usually the way it is.
No, the scenario you brought up, that makes it all fine and dandy. It's warm and fuzzy.
Yeah,
warm and fuzzy. Let's go with that one.
I think that's what I'm going to believe. How's that? All right, U.S. Open update as we continue along. Round one, not quite in the books, but close enough. We'll give you who's leading and what happened to Phil yesterday at Torrey Pines as we continue with Wake Up Call on a Friday.
Listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, and happy Friday to you. Hit us up on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. U.S. Open yesterday, round one. I got to catch a good chunk of it. It was on NBC. It was on primetime television. So it was great. Torrey Pines looks great. What a nice course that is. Right by the ocean. Beautiful.
Except when the June gloom rolls in.
It's amazing that that's a public course.
I know.
You can play that? Like, you just go and play that?
Yep.
Gorgeous. So Phil Mickelson yesterday shot 4 over 75. Now, he's not out of this because the U.S. Open is like, you know, nobody gets away at the U.S. Open unless you're Tiger. You know, usually you're not going to get a guy like, well, 12 under is going to win. So 4 over is fine. You can, if you give a good round today and get it to round 1 over, 2 over, you might be good in room for the weekend. However, he was kind of upset at the fans with their cameras, which kind of disappointed me because I thought Phil wasn't like that. Is that wrong? Is that wrong to say? Anyway, let's Phil talk about it. Here's Phil Mickelson on what was bothering him out on the golf course.
Yeah, Phil, on your second shot on 13, I think you had to step away from the ball about three times. There were cell phones chirping all around you. And given where you ended up on the next shot, how much of a factor was that in the round?
Yeah, it's part of professional golf. You have to learn to deal with it. I don't understand why you just can't turn that little button on the side, into silent. But I probably didn't deal with it, you know, internally as well as I could have, or as well as I need to. I mean, it's part of playing the game out here at this level, and certainly I didn't do the best job of dealing with it.
Why do professional golfers need complete silence,
right,
on their show? Why do they need that? Why are we allowed to yell and scream? And professional tennis too. That's another one where the serves are all quiet. Why are we allowing that? Why do we allow this to happen, but we do not allow it in other sports? And I know there's an adversarial part of sports where, yeah, I'm going to be loud when you're in my arena. Yeah, absolutely. I'm rooting for my team. And golf doesn't have that, right? But Phil Mickelson has been playing golf since he was 5, right? He's been swinging a golf club every day practically for 50 years. Why in the world doesn't he have the muscle memory to not be distracted by a click of a cell phone camera? It's not like somebody yelled and screamed at him while he was in the middle of his backswing.
Right.
It's like a bunch of little clicks. Like, why can't you just go, yeah, I don't even hear it.
I'm with you. I mean, we don't have to go full Happy Gilmore where they have noisemakers,
right,
and,
sure,
you know, banging those tubes that make popping sounds or whatever. We don't need that. But at some point, you know, the one thing always sticks out in my mind with Happy Gilmore is when he turns to the crowd, it's like, come on, let's make a little noise.
Yeah.
Like, why can't a golfer do that?
Ken Green was a golfer on tour, and he actually advocated for this, and he got shot down immediately. But he said,
of course.
He said, I'm a professional athlete. He goes, if I can't do this with crowds and noise and distractions, what am I doing?
I mean, you think, like, what's the probably the most pressure-packed thing, one of the more pressure-packed things in sport is making a free throw, shooting a free throw.
Right.
And you look at the opposite side. I mean, it's gotten way beyond creative.
It's crazy. It's crazy.
Especially
what will happen.
College. In college, it's like no holds barred what they're able to do back there.
They're putting up posters of, like, girls in bikinis.
Yes.
I mean, it's always been crazy behind the net or the goal in college basketball at places. This is the one thing about professional golfers that it's a very coddled environment, and so their expectations never change. There's never, like, you're always under the impression that every shot you take, everyone will be quiet, everyone will be courteous, you'll have full concentration, you'll have full, you know, full attention to the ball. But we're talking muscle memory here. Like, in the end, it's muscle memory. When he sets himself up, and let's say he wants to hit a 5-yard cut, and he sets him up for that 5-yard cut, he's not thinking, all right, I got to take my hands back, and I got to make sure I cock my wrist, and then I got to make sure. His body then takes over. His muscle memory takes over. And the same swing that he's been using forever and ever kicks in. I don't understand why they break down like this mentally when a click of a camera. Like Tiger, remember when Tiger used to do this with Steve Williams? They used to go break cameras. Like that's so awful. And Phil, I never saw Phil like this. I never saw Phil where he would react like that to crowds. He seemed to be like, yeah, it's all right. Whatever. But you made a point earlier. Elaborate on your point that we were talking about before the show about Phil. Maybe this is just a different U.S. Open for him because of what happened last month.
Maybe he bought into the hype as well that, you know, he's coming off a major win, which was unexpected. We talked about it for at least a week, maybe two.
Sure.
You know, and couple that. And anytime someone else, like when Elio Castroneves won the Indy 500, we brought Phil up again. We were talking about LeBron when he was having his success with the Lakers during the play-in match. We were talking about Phil again. So, I mean, it was just all this Phil hype going on. Maybe it's part of it that he bought into it as well and thought he was going to do much better because he's playing on his home course.
That may be it. You might be right. Like if he won the PGA, right? If Phil won the PGA and then privately behind closed doors, he's like, guys, I have no idea how I won that. I'm not really playing that great. I just luckily made this shot and luckily I made this. And maybe he goes in the U.S. Open going, look, PGA is a different animal, but I have no chance here. Then it might be different. But I think you're right. I think Phil may have gone into this going, look, it's at Torrey Pines. I'm playing really well. I just won a major. Maybe I should be in contention for this at 51 years old. Maybe I should be on top of the leaderboard. And when I'm not, I get a little bit frustrated. And then this allows me to get frustrated even more.
I'm just thinking, you know, put the U.S. Open anywhere else in the United States.
Right.
You know, name your golf course, you know, Oakhurst, right? Say it's there. Maybe he's not as, hyped up about it for himself. But I think because it's Torrey Pines, because he, you know, he probably plays there on off days when he wants to. You know, I don't know. He just mingles with the public.
Oh, well, since it hosted the U.S. Open, I'm sure he did go play it a number just to prep for it and just be like, because again, it went through the 2001 changes and he's probably still like, yeah, let me work it through.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so you're right. I mean, so
there's just a part of me that maybe that's playing in his head that he thinks he should be doing better because listen, all the other golfers are staying in hotels. He's going home.
Yeah. That's right.
He's staying in his house. He's doing his thing. I mean, he has his normal routine.
He's going back to Rancho Santa Fe.
Which literally is from Torrey Pines. Honestly, it's about a 10-15 minute drive.
I think I told you this before. Did I tell you that I found Phil Mickelson's house on Google Earth?
Yes.
Yeah, because I read a column or an article that said he had a whole practice facility in his backyard, like a whole like a driving range with three different greens and all these different, you know, and I looked and I was like scourging, like a stalker that I am. I was flying over on Google Earth and I found one house that had a driving range and three greens. And I said, oh, that's the compound. That's where Phil Mickelson lives.
Yeah.
That's where it is. And it was great. I mean, he was right. That had different greens, different bunkers, a whole range with a net. And like he could hit shots at different targets in his backyard. Fantastic. But yeah, you're right. I mean, for a guy, you know, again, if this was at the country club in Brookline, Massachusetts, or if this was at Shinnecock, or if this was at wherever, he might go in going, look, realistically, I don't think I'm going to be competitive. But at Torrey Pines, maybe he feels like he should and was like, man, this round ain't really going all that great.
And then, you know, labels out of phone. Because listen, I mean, I've told my personal story with Phil before where I interrupted his putt. At the Phoenix Open, I had a newborn. I mean, I think the kid was, you know, my middle son was probably about 3-4 months old at the time and started crying a little bit just as Phil's about to, you know, size up his putt and go in. And we kind of locked eyes with each other. And I was like, yeah, I'll walk the other way. I get you. But he wasn't mad at me. He didn't complain about me.
No, of course.
You know, after that round, I don't even know what he shot that day. Be honest with you, but I don't remember him calling me out.
Well,
but to a certain point, I get, you know, I can understand the frustration of a phone where, you know, you're on a golf course, you know, you have to be silent. Why can't you hit the silent button?
Right. Yeah, it's true. That is true.
I can understand that. Like, you know, the law of the land when you're on a golf course.
Yeah.
Why do you leave the sound on?
I do think, and this is one of the issues. I was at the PGA Championship at Baltusrol in 2016, and you know that was coming off. It was just before Jordan Spieth won the British Open, so there was a lot of Jordan Spieth hype still from the 2015 season, and Ricky Fowler was popular, Phil obviously, and whatnot, and people were breaking out their phones, and as soon as they would, marshals would be like, "Put that away, put that away, put that away," and I remember talking to a couple of people in the media tent, and I said, "Listen." One guy said, "Look, the tour has to get a handle on this. This is not going away. You're not going to be able to stop this. People want these moments. They want to capture these moments, whether it's video or camera. They are capturing these moments. They're going to do it anyway. They're going to sneak them. They're going to find a way to get these shots. You are not going to stop them. And you know what? You look worse and worse and worse and worse and worse if that's all your marshals are doing. If the only thing your marshals are doing constantly is telling people to put their phones away, it's going to make people do them more. In the end, you can't kick everybody out, right? The golf has to learn to adapt to this. People now have a device in their pocket that is allowing them to capture all the moments of their life. We live in an age where you want to capture everything that's happening to you all the time. We're taking pictures of lunch. All right, we're taking pictures of lunch. What do you think we're going to do when a professional golfer is standing 3 feet away from you? Right? A celebrity, a superstar, a player like Mickelson. You think we're just going to go, "Well, I'd love to take a picture, but the camera can't come out of my pocket." Of course it's going to come out of your pocket. Of course you're going to take a video or a picture, right? My goodness, we take pictures of everything. Look at this bird that was on my porch. Look at this car that I saw on the road. Look at my house. It's brand new and painted. Look what I did to my stove. Right, you think Phil Mickelson 5 feet from you is going to be like, "Well, whatever." You're going to take a picture and show it to everybody. And the tour in golf has to get a handle on this. And again, when golfers complain and they complain about cameras, you're just going to have to learn to accept it in this day and age. That's just the way it is. It's just the way it is. So young people out there, learn to play with cameras. If you are a golfer and you're learning to be on the tour, have your buddies take pictures, throw change, make noise on your practice shots.
Well, I'll ask you this. Wouldn't it be more distracting or more of a deterrent when you're playing the Open in howling winds and rain than someone with a cell phone camera?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking, right?
I mean, I just call me crazy, but I would think, like, if you're trying to drive 300 yards in a headwind that's coming at you like 50 miles per hour at St. Andrews, I think that would be harder to do.
Yeah, I think so too.
Then, someone like, hey, can you let me get that backswing again, Phil?
Amazing.
Click. I don't
Amazing.
Know.
All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. Hit us up as we continue along on a Friday on Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hey, this hour of Wake Up Call, presented by Rocket Mortgage. Need a mortgage to fit your life? Rocket can. Michael on Twitter, the cheapest ticket for tonight's game, Atlanta Hawks, Philadelphia 76ers. Standing room only at $165. That sounds...
Sounds steep.
It's steep, but if you had the money, would you stand...
See, that's the problem I have.
To be in the arena for this?
When you go to arenas, you go to stadiums now, there's like always like a little bar area or sitting
right.
area. I guess maybe you fight to get there.
For $165.
To sit outside a food court?
That's right.
Basically?
Remember, it wasn't that long ago, I think we made a promo about it, that LeBron was complaining that there were people sitting courtside at an Atlanta Hawks game.
Yes.
Remember that? Remember we were making fun of that? They're like, who's getting courtside seats at an Atlanta Hawks game? Now, apparently, that's five figures now.
Can you imagine those ticket prices? You know, my Lord.
The ones we thought, why would anybody be at courts pay that money for an Atlanta Hawks game? Well, now they're one game away from the Eastern Conference Finals, so shame on us not seeing the potential of the Atlanta Hawks basketball team. God bless them. That's great. God, I remember the Atlanta Hawks when I was a kid. I know I keep bringing up my 80s childhood. I remember the Atlanta Hawks as a good team, but they're never quite threatening enough.
No, they had a good player.
They had Donnie Wilkins, and that was about it. I think they had Tree Rollins, if I'm not mistaken.
I couldn't name you another player. And all I know is they were coached by Lenny Wilkins.
Yeah, well, Lenny Wilkins.
That was it. They had Dominique Wilkins.
When did they have Spud Webb?
Oh, I forgot. Yeah, he was on that
Spud
team.
Webb.
Yes.
When did they have him?
He was all the favorite of the kids because he was our height and he could
dunk.
He
was our height and he could dunk. Exactly right. Yeah, Atlanta back then, there were teams like Boston in the East that they had to like really fight, like the Bulls, young Jordan, Isaiah, and the Pistons were like, oh, they're just going to take it one day. Like you knew the Pistons were building a really good team that eventually they would just grab the East. Sixers, of course. Knicks had Bernard King, but Atlanta was always that team that was like, Dominique Wilkins could be dangerous, but he's not that dangerous. They're not that good. And they were right. Celtics used to get them in the playoffs and kind of dispatch of them quickly. But that was about it. That's all. Dominique Wilkins, and that's about it. But, man, oh, man. They are one game away from the Eastern Conference Finals and will be a threat in that game no matter who they play. They will be a threat. They will make you sweat and they will make you worried. They're that fun. They're that good. All right, coming up next hour, we got the good, the bad, and the dumb. We'll also get inside round one of the U.S. Open. Russell Henley is the clubhouse leader at 4-under. Louis Oosthuizen has to go back out to finish two more holes. He's also at 4-under. And they got a one-shot lead is going into round two today. Brooks Koepka, by the way, 2-under par 69 yesterday at Torrey Pines.